It's been a wild week in politics, and we will discuss as many of the issues making news as we can in this edition of the Week in Review. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, November the 4th. There's so much going on in state, national, and international politics this week. Let's get right to it and welcome in our two guests with different political perspectives to discuss and debate the news of the week with you. Join in at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guests. Georgia Derslati is a professor of political science at Beloit College. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And Owen Robinson is a columnist for the West Bend Daily News and blogger at bootsandsabers.com. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Georgia.
Good morning.
All right, here we go. Just out this morning, the Labor Department released its jobs report. U.S. unemployment rate has dropped from 9.1% to 9%. The economy added 80,000 new jobs. So, should we crack open the champagne, Georgia Derslati?
Well, it's certainly movement in the right direction. It is what we want to see happening. We need more to crack open the champagne. I wonder how the Republicans in Congress are going to spin this as bad, because you know that they're going to. This is the disappointing part. We're starting to move in the right direction. A lot of having a market move is having confidence in it. And so I wish the Washington scene would be less about the next election and more about governing well.
Mm-hmm. Owen, will the Republicans put a negative spin on this?
Oh, I'm sure they will. And you know, it's not all good news. I mean, it is great news. We are moving in the right direction. It's great to see. We've had several consecutive months now where we've been adding jobs. It becomes a matter of we haven't added as quickly. And even this, the 80,000, I think the projected was a little over 100,000 they were expecting. So it was below what was expected. So agree with Georgia. We're moving in the right direction. It's great to see things improving. It's great to see people getting back to work. It's not going at a pace, you know, at this pace, the recovery is going to take a decade. We need the pace to pick up for it to really catch on, and hopefully we'll continue to see that improve in the months to come.
We'll talk more about other national issues in the news, but also breaking this morning, our state legislature pulled another all-nighter, or the assembly anyway, adjourning things at around 6:30 this morning. Let me ask you first, before we go into some of the specifics that passed this week in the special session on jobs, was this a special session on jobs, or Georgia Derslati, as some Democrats have put it, a special session on everything but jobs?
It's a special session on everything but jobs, and I can hardly wait to hear how Owen says it's anything else. Let's see. Let us shoot Girl Scouts selling cookies walking up to your door in the Castle Doctrine. You know, let us cap attorney fees. Let's promote sex ed. Let's change the primary date. Okay, that maybe isn't their fault. That's the feds. Let's work on concealed carry. Let's eliminate minority status. Let's redistrict so that the Republicans have a better chance of winning. How can anyone with 2 cents worth of intelligence say this is about jobs?
Owen.
Well, they did. I'm going to agree to a large extent, Georgia. There's a lot of social legislation, a lot of things that didn't have much, if anything, to do with jobs that went through this special session, which is always the risk of a special session. You can call it for any purpose you want, but once the legislature's in session, they can do whatever they want. But at the same time, they did pass a number of bills that Scott Walker had proposed for this special session, including the one I disagreed with regarding the capping of lawyer fees and items that you may disagree with their relationship with jobs, but clearly that's what they were targeted for from a Republican perspective.
Yeah, let me ask you, Owen, to talk a little bit more about that cap on lawyers' fees. It did pass. Why do you think that was wrong?
Well, I find myself at loggerheads with my fellow conservatives on this and that. The way the bill is structured, it's for if you if you're suing for some transgression from a business and you don't have the money to pay for a lawyer, so a lawyer takes your case on contingency and they get a fee at the end of the day based on the amount of work and whatnot. Right now, the standard under law is that they get a reasonable fee as determined by the judge. The Republicans capped that at three times compensatory damages. So say your damages were $5,000, the lawyer could only be paid a maximum of $15,000. Well, in a case that may go through several years of litigation and go up through you know, the appeals court and even to the state Supreme Court, maybe even bleeding to the federal courts, you never know where cases go sometimes, a lawyer can run up hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of bills and hours and depositions and all the expenses that go with it. I think that as a pure conservative principle matter, I have a problem with the government setting arbitrary limits on what private lawyers can earn for a living, but also the consequences of such actions tip the power too far in the name of business and too far away from consumers.
Yeah, I know, Georgia, you're not going to necessarily disagree with with Owen on that particular item, but what about Georgia? That, you know, the governor and Republicans say that this tort reform that they passed this session was needed because it placed this burden on businesses and that stopped them from, you know, from creating jobs.
I think that's a ruse for getting at tort lawyers who generally support Democrats. The number of cases where this is a problem is really, really quite small, and there are some, but I think Owen, you know, hit it right. It's just a matter of common sense or being sensible about how we want to structure our legal system so that everybody has incentives to do the right thing. And this really, it's so hard to spin this about jobs, Owen. I know you can put the rhetoric to it, but, you know, like, tell me, how many jobs will this really foster or deny if it doesn't go through?
Well, herein we lie in a different philosophical difference about what government should do to create jobs and where we see the difference. So for the Democrats, anything that doesn't result in a direct cash payout from government to somebody who's going to possibly create some jobs equals it's not a jobs bill. From a Republican perspective, they're working more on the framework of the tort reform, the legal environment, the business incentives, the items that will foster an environment where business will want to create jobs by themselves.
Yeah, but,
so what
but,
you see
but,
is a
but,
lot of...
But you're not telling... You're really not defending this in a way that suggests how this markedly changes the environment. And it is just not true to say that Democrats see everything as a direct cash payout. I mean, come on.
Well, and I don't think that there's honestly very much in the session that markedly changes. I think they're nibbling around the edges at this point. Most of the serious reforms they did happened back earlier in the year.
Let me bring up some of the other issues that that did pass in the legislature. We will have a castle doctrine, as Georgia alluded to a little bit earlier, which would grant immunity to homeowners should they harm or even kill someone who is breaking into their house, if it's in self-defense in their house or at their workplace or in their car, I think is also a part of our castle.
Or trespassing on their property.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's wrong with this, Georgia? Shouldn't I be able to defend myself against a robber in my house?
Again, as Owen talked about with the balance. Now they're going to assume that if anyone is actually on your property, if you have a sign up that says, you know, no soliciting, and Mormons come to the door, you can shoot them under this bill. That's just wrong. You know, the assumption that anybody who is there to do you harm is dangerous. Why? Why in the state of Wisconsin, a nice place to live, do we need this kind of law? I hearken back to the Japanese exchange student down in Louisiana who was lost and knocked on somebody's door and ended up dead, mm-hmm. looking for directions. I mean, I shudder to think about the first person who dies wrongly under this, and how quickly, how tragic that's going to be, and then how quickly this will tip back to a presumption of, you know, there has to be some reasonable evidence that there is a problem.
Owen, why did Wisconsin need this?
Well, first, Georgia mischaracterized the law quite a bit. What the law, what Castle Doctrine does, especially as Wisconsin wrote it, is give the benefit of the doubt to the homeowner that by the fact that somebody unlawfully entered their property, that the benefit of the doubt is they were protecting themselves. So geared at, you know, when it's 2 a.m. and someone's broken through your window and you don't know what's going on, that I don't have to try and figure out what the bad guy's motives are before I defend myself and my family. So that's where it's geared toward. But to Georgia's point of somebody coming to your door and Mormons, you're going to blow them away, let's be clear. It just puts the benefit of the doubt there. There's still going to be a full investigation by the police, by trained investigators. There's still going to be all of the rigors of law to make sure it's there. It's just the benefit of the doubt. And really, it's kind of an insult, I think. And we had this same debate with the concealed carry debate for years now, to think that for all the other states that have Castle Doctrine and who have not seen the results that Georgia fears, to somehow think that Wisconsinites are more base creatures that are going to resort to shooting people on their doorsteps is quite an insult to the nature of Wisconsinites.
Georgia, you wanted to get in?
I don't think that we need the shift of benefit of doubt. I think that it would have worked just fine if somebody broke in and you shot them at 2 a.m. I think this just invites the worrisome crazies to use their guns faster than they should.
Go ahead, Owen.
I was just going to say, and again, the evidence in states that already have this don't bear out those fears.
Well, our concealed carry law went into effect this week. People were applying to get their permit for concealed carry, and applications were pouring in on that very first day. What do you think of that, Owen?
I think it's a great day for Wisconsin, and I see liberty spread. My application is in. I'm watching my mailbox.
And Georgia, what do you think?
I still don't know why any state needs concealed carry. I think law enforcement should have carry. I just don't know why adding more guns to the mix is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I grew up with a lot of guns around because I grew up on a farm. We have a lot of hunting. I just don't understand why, we have guns for hunting. I don't understand why we escalate the violence by promoting concealed carry.
So, Owen, would you conceal carry in the assembly gallery down the road?
I don't know if I have my gun on me. I guess I would.
I'm bringing up the issue that the state legislature took on this issue as well this week and coming up with rules as to, I guess, lawmakers can decide individually if they want concealed guns in their offices. The assembly is allowing them on the floor and in the gallery. The Senate on the floor, but not the gallery. Do you think that concealed weapons should be permitted in the legislature, Owen?
I don't see why the legislature should be different than the rest of Wisconsin. I think that as we have a right to carry guns, and the beautiful thing about liberty and about freedom is that I understand that Georgia doesn't understand why some people may choose to carry a weapon. The fact is that it's their right, and Georgia doesn't have to understand that it's our right to do, and as we've seen in the other 48 states who have it, now some, you know, 295 million Americans under some concealed carry law, including 4 states where there's no permitting whatsoever, we've seen a decrease in violence. So whether there's a causal effect there, who knows, but certainly there isn't an increase in violence. So to presume that the fact that people are arming themselves for their protection when they feel it necessary is somehow escalating violence is just false, and the evidence bears it out. And I don't see, again, going back to the legislature, why that should be any different. I think that more liberty should be allowed in that gallery, as we've seen other debates this week regarding.
Yeah, and we will get into that in just a moment. But Georgia, on concealed carry, you know, in state government?
Well, first of all, I agree that the reason that it's there at all is because of the hypocrisy that they couldn't pass it for the rest of the state and then deny to themselves, even though statistics are pretty clear that it's more so at the municipal level than the state legislatures themselves. But it's kind of dangerous to be an elected official right now. Relatively speaking, people do come after you with guns, and that's why public buildings have gun, you know, that they go through. So now, you know, like the question we were kind of laughing about last night. So we're not going to be really checking to see if they're carrying guns by screening them anymore. Oh, wait, we will check, and that way the security will know who to watch because they'll know who's packing that way. And the Senate, you know, maybe the Senate fears that they become the shooting gallery, which is why you can have them on the floor so you could shoot back, but they don't want them up in the gallery. By the way, we have a much lower gun crime rate than other states, and that decline in violent crime in general is probably related to age, the general aging of the population, more than anything else.
Yeah, well, moving on to another a very related issue, there are protesters who are upset that they cannot use their cameras or display any signs when they're in the legislative galleries or hearing rooms. A bunch are getting arrested. It led to the arrest of 18 people this week, including Week in Review regular guest Matt Rothschild, the publisher of the Progressive magazine. So, Georgia, do you think it's odd that we can carry guns in the gallery, but we cannot use cameras?
Absolutely. Let liberty live. Yes, freedom of speech. You know, we consider freedom of speech to be one of the more important freedoms that we have. There are some linchpin freedoms, and that's one of them. And this is a real curtailment of one of the most primary liberties that we have. And I was really proud of Matt Rothschild and the rest of them, and even taping the sign to their shirt to display the sign legally without having to sign. My son did that in high school when he was denied freedom of political speech there, and I think it's a great tactic.
Yeah.
And, you know, concealed camera law.
Yeah, well, Owen, what do you think of this this flap over that?
Just to be clear, it's already within the rules to carry a camera in the gallery, just not to use it, which would be the same as the rules with guns.
Which
you can carry it, just can't use it.
The same as you can't speak. You can't speak. It's like spending his money. You can't speak.
Okay, I'm trying to agree with you here, Georgia. Give me a second. But I do agree. I think that the rules make sense as far as if there's a disruption in the gallery. I don't think people should be disrupting the people's business as it's taking place on the floor. But using having unobtrusive signs or taking pictures, as long as it's not the loud flash bulbs from 30s cameras, you know, then I think we can do that a little better nowadays.
So why is this law there then, Owen? I mean, justify this law.
It's not a law. It's a rule.
It's a rule.
Excuse me. Yeah. You're right.
But it's a rule because in the days, it embarrasses legislators to have people take pictures of them dozing off at their chairs and then have them show up in campaign literature. It's there to protect the legislators, not the people, which is why it's a bad rule.
Yeah. Well, there we've got some more agreement going on here. But Brad in Kenosha wants to talk about this issue, too. Hi, Brad.
I really have a problem with they keep making rule after rule and law after law and taking away things when, in reality, what's wrong with having a camera? Why can we have a gun and no camera? Why are you taking my rights away and making all these rules when supposedly you're anti-government in our lives and we make thousands of rules every week?
Yeah, according to a guest we talked to about this issue, this rule has been on the books, I thought, for many, many years.
Decades. Yep.
Yeah, and it's in part no use of cameras, no laptops, no there's other, you know, the displaying of sign was that it would block the view of other people in that gallery. So in any case, do you think Owen that these rules are going to be repealed in any way?
I hope so. I think I hope they are. The problem is we're right now at the end of the session for the year, so I don't see when they'll get to that with all the other stuff they're trying to get done. But hopefully there's 4 days, I think, scheduled for the spring. They come back to do some mopping up. Hopefully this is one of the things they'll take up and fix.
Mm-hmm. And Georgia?
Well, since they're working so hard on jobs right now, I predict that they won't get to this one because it disadvantages the current majority. And I would tell Brad that I think Owen is a principled conservative, and I'm not surprised to hear that he thinks this should be removed.
We are talking with Georgia Derslotti, professor of political science at Beloit College, and Owen Robinson, columnist for the West Bend Daily News and blogger at bootsandsabers.com. This is the Week in Review. We'll talk about some other state issues, bills that passed in the state legislature. We'll talk about some other national issues, including the sexual harassment allegations that were revealed against Republican presidential candidate Herman Cain. That's a little bit later in the program, and we welcome your input on the issues in the news this week. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up later today, it's your views on the news at 4 o'clock. Gene Purcell in for Ben Marins today. You can call in after 4 with your thoughts on what you think is the week's top news story. We're reviewing all the news of the week, or as much as we can anyway, during this edition of The Week in Review with our two guests, Georgia Derslotti and Owen Robinson. We're going to talk about as many state issues as we can as the legislature is wrapping up its special session, and lots of policy changes, lots of bills passing. So we'll do sort of a lightning round on the state legislation. We'll also talk about other national and international news as we go along. We will, by the way, have more state news in our state capitol report on Monday between 7 and 8. Our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, will recap all of the significant political news of the week during the state capitol report Monday. And then on Wisconsin Public Television tonight, it's Here and Now at 7:30, and more on the latest in state politics on Here and Now. All right, let's talk about some of these bills that passed in this special session. The Assembly passed a bill, now going to the governor, that would allow student test scores to be used in disciplining teachers, a reason to fire a teacher. Is that a good idea, Owen?
I haven't gotten into all the details of that. As I understand, it gives local school districts the right to be able to include test scores as one factor in the termination of a teacher, but not as an exclusive factor. I think giving local districts that right is certainly reasonable because, you know, I think the fears Democrats brought up in the debate, some of them were rational in that you worry that would push teachers into the good districts with the quote-unquote good kids so that they get better test scores and be safer. At the same time, if it's local districts we're talking about and you have one teacher teaching the same subject to the same student population and their test scores are markedly worse and continue to be worse, I think that should be a factor that the administration should be able to consider in that teacher's employment status. So I think as long as it's taken with as a factor in an overall teacher evaluation, that it's a good idea.
Good idea, Georgia?
Well, I sat on the school board for 6 years and know how challenging trying to keep a school district in good shape can be. The worry is that it is used in the wrong way and the size of the factor is too big. And coming out of some of the original work with No Child Left Behind, there's reason to be skeptical about it. So it's really a matter of slippery slope and the scope to which this can be applied as one of other factors.
Let's kind of really roar through these issues. The Senate also passed a bill yesterday, the sex education bill, which would require schools to stress abstinence. Do you want to see that pass, Owen?
Well, this is actually, if you remember back in 2010, in the last throes of the Democratic legislature and Governor Doyle, they passed a bill that was really a relatively radical plan backed by Planned Parenthood to push Planned Parenthood's form of sex education in the public schools. So this is a turning back the clock to how it was before, stress on abstinence, more local control around how they teach that. I think those are all good things. I do think that we need comprehensive sex education in our public schools. I think as part of that, let's face it, there's no better way to prevent pregnancy and STDs than being abstinent. So I think that needs to be it's a great starting place. But mm-hmm. I think that, you know, each district has its own nuances, and the more local control we have around their curriculum, the better.
Georgia.
They teach abstinence in most schools, and I think it's a real mischaracterization of a radical way of teaching sex ed. That was a comprehensive plan, and it includes talking about abstinence and marriage, because there is no better way to stop it than abstinence, for sure. And what we know happens is, I teach at Beloit College. Beloit had an all-abstinence program. They have the highest teen pregnancy rate in the state. Now, show me how that works. So comprehensive sex ed, we agree.
Here's another one. The Assembly passed a bill introduced by a Democrat that would bar the use of race in determining who gets some college grants. That's probably not going to make it to the Senate until next year. Georgia Durislati, should this pass?
It is already not legal to use it, so it's just grandstanding.
What do you mean? Right now,
because of court rulings, and mm-hmm. You know, really, this goes back to some of the changes in affirmative action in higher ed that started with Bakke in 1976.
So why did Democrats stage a filibuster all night on Tuesday night over this bill?
The symbol of it is really horrible, and it really speaks to it speaks to the ways in which we right now seem to be denying that race matters at all in many of the policies. So it's worth the filibuster over the symbol of it. But I still say, because it's still already not legal, to make this law would just, you know, like accelerate the problem, and it's a slippery slope kind of thing, but it's more symbolic politics than anything else.
All right, Owen, your thoughts on that one?
Well, first, it's interesting that Peggy Krusek actually had to have guards getting into her office yesterday because of this and protesters around her. So when we speak of violence against legislators, that was an example, and I do think we should all condemn that as unacceptable for any legislator. At the same time, it is largely already against federal law in this regard, but if you have a program designed to benefit poor people, then it should benefit poor people regardless of their race. And I'll probably butcher the quote, but from Justice Roberts, of the best way to stop discriminating on the basis of race is to stop discriminating on the basis of race. And it's really that simple, in that if you have a program designed for poor folks, geared at poor folks and first-time college kids, and as the program designed, it's still... if you're a first generation going to college, you could benefit from it. If you're a felon, you could benefit from it going to college. There are many other ways to benefit from program like that. But really, the color of your skin shouldn't determine whether or not the state's going to help you go to college or not.
I want to follow up on you. I did see some video of protesters outside Peggy Krusek's office. I didn't see everything, but they were, you know, asking her to apologize and saying shame, shame, shame. Were they violent?
And I apologize. I was scanning stories this morning.
Okay.
I saw one news story saying that she had to have an escort to her office.
Yeah. The protesters are bipartisan in their protest, Georgia?
You know, this is really important to think about the way race matters, and how do we stop people from discriminating by race? It's to highlight it in law. And, you know, this really comes down to an ideological, philosophical difference in approach. Do we just pretend race doesn't matter and say that we can't look at it at all, which is how we got to the poor people class kind of design for these programs? It was equal as exactly the same. Or do we recognize that not everyone is similarly situated and that it matters if you happen not to be a white person in this country? I mean, I had a student who was much wealthier than I was, who happened to be black, and he would still get stopped while driving. He still would be under suspicion when he went for help with a flat tire. He still got picked up all the time. And, you know, his wealth had nothing to do with the way he got picked up. In fact, he was suspicious because he had nice cars and nice clothes.
We have to move on to some other issues. State Senator, Republican State Senator Dale Schultz said no earlier this week to a bill that would have started the redistricting maps early in time for any potential Senate recalls. And he said no to this Republican proposal. His office was egged this week. Nobody knows who did that. At least last time I checked, nobody did. But what's the deal with that, Owen?
Well, again, anytime you have this sort of stuff against the legislator, it should be condemned, and especially when they are vandalizing the people's building there, I think that should be condemned. That's unacceptable. There are ways to protest. There are ways to voice our displeasure with a legislator without resorting to something as childish as throwing eggs at windows. I mean, really?
Well, what do you think of Dale Schultz saying no to that bill?
You know, this is an interesting thing because it's an issue of the Republicans' own doing. I mean, we redistrict every 10 years. We have new districts now, and it's something we go through every year. The difference here is the recall election. So if when the Republicans had originally passed the redistricting plan, if they had just said it would be effective at the beginning of 2012, this would be a non-issue. It would have never happened. The fact that they timed the redistricting with the November election next year now creates this issue where we may have recall elections where you have electors from an old district doing a recall, but then they'd be electing a legislator who would then represent people in a new district who never had the opportunity to vote for that legislator in the first place. So you end up with this real conundrum, whether it's old district, new district, and who has the right. I think Dale is doing this more for political reasons than anything else. But on the issue itself, it's the Republicans' own doing, and it shouldn't have come to this.
Georgia?
I am with all of the editorials that spoke to courage in standing up to his own party in bad legislation, and yet one more move to confuse and suppress voting. And I think he and Tim Cullen are the shining lights of our state legislature right now because they at least seem to want to govern.
We will continue talking about the news of the week in just a moment. We will also have our Week in Review quiz, talking with Georgia Derslotti, a professor of political science at Beloit College, and Owen Robinson, columnist for the West Bend Daily News and blogger at bootsandsabers.com. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Time now for the Week in Review quiz. There's been a lot of heavy news this week, so we have a heavy quiz question. The Travel Network's program Man vs. Food Nation this week features Wisconsin foods, including a 93-ounce burger. That's right, 93 ounces. I think that's about 6 pounds or so. I'm bad on my math, but a massive burger found at a Green Bay restaurant. So our question today, can you name that massive burger? What is the name of the massive burger that was featured on Man vs. Food Nation on the Travel Network? 1-800-642-1234. You can call in with your answer or your guess. We will choose a winner from all of the correct answers. We'll randomly choose that winner, and you will win one of the books we featured on the program this week. 1-800-642-1234, or you can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. All right, now let's get back to the news of the week, talking with Georgia Derslotti and Owen Robinson in this edition of the Week in Review. And let me ask Georgia Derslotti first, What's your reaction to these accusations of sexual harassment that were revealed against GOP presidential candidate Herman Cain this week? How is this affecting the race?
Well, it certainly will affect the race. He seems to have picked up support from it, which is, I think, ironic. I mean, I think what's happening with Cain is he is an attractive candidate in many regards, and he's catapulted to the top from the anybody but Romney core of the Republican Party, who is looking for the alternative that hasn't stumbled. And yet there's the pushback saying who's really going to win from party insiders, and so that anybody who seems to be moving up suddenly has lots of good op research against them. So the whole question of how this plays out in electoral politics is interesting and curious. As far as what should be done about sexual harassment is a problem. The fact that there was a settlement suggests that something happened. Like I think the rest of Americans who are following this story, wish we had a sense of the nature of the supposed offense so that we could ourselves decide reasonable woman standard how egregious whatever he did was.
Yeah, the Politico website leaked the story, or somebody leaked it to the Politico website. A couple of settlements when women who worked at the Restaurant Association when Herman Cain was there got settlements in the $30,000 range, something
and
like that.
A third has come forward.
Yeah.
And frankly, the campaign has handled it horribly. But, you know, sexual harassment is a serious matter. I think it is pernicious that we see this against a black male candidate, since there's plenty of sexual harassment that goes around from other candidates. I think that it plays into racial stereotypes, which gives it extra punch. I just would like to be able to move to understand more what happened.
Mm-hmm. Owen, do you think the campaign's handling this okay?
Well, it's an interesting morning. I find myself agreeing with Georgia quite a bit. I think the campaign has handled it horribly. I do think that there is a racial element in that. I mean, for goodness sakes, if we look back at some of the candidates we have today and in the past where we have accusations of outright sexual assault and rape and, you know, affairs and all sorts of stuff that come up, and yet with Herman Cain, we get vague, unsourced, you know, anonymous things of there was some harassment. We don't know any details. Settlements mean something, but not much. In the age of high dollar lawsuits, it is not uncommon for even just threats of lawsuits about regarding harassment against high powered individuals to be settled pretty judiciously and quickly, even if there's nothing there because they don't want to do the fight. But without knowing any details, and the few ones we've seen have been so innocuous, where there's one report where Cain remarked to a female worker that she was as tall as his wife and held up his arm like it is, you know, chest area, and that was considered somehow uneasy. And so there, what we do know doesn't seem to cross the bar of true sexual harassment, yet at the same time there's all the kerfuffle about it. So I do think that Cain is being held to a standard that he wouldn't be if he weren't black.
Well, he still is leading polls, and his fundraising, he raised a lot of money this week too. Do you think he's still in this campaign, Owen?
I think he's still in it. I think not if he keeps his campaign structure how it is, not for much longer. But I do think he's in. I think honestly, the sexual harassment thing is the salacious thing that gets the headlines, but it's really the financial, the campaign funding things that have been uncovered regarding some early workings of his campaign with his chief of staff and everyone that I think there's where the meat is, if there is any meat that could bring down his campaign.
Well, let's move on to some other issues. The U.S. Senate blocked a jobs proposal from President Obama yesterday. This is the one that would have focused on infrastructure spending funded by a tax on millionaires. Was this a good plan or not, Georgia Derslotti?
I absolutely think, as I drive around on bridges that are crumbling, that this would be a wise use of government money. And the notion that somebody who makes more than $1 million, even if they're getting it from capital gains, which is investment, should be paying at least as much as others who make far, far less and hence have their taxes be a much higher percentage of their disposable income. To call it class warfare when many, many millionaires pay nothing or much less than Owen and I do, is just political rhetoric. So I think it's a good idea. I think the Senate is blocking. I think they think if they can continue to stall and keep the economy locked up, that they will have a better chance of winning next November. And I think that's what they're doing, and I think it's deplorable.
Do you think that's what's happening, Owen?
Well, first you have to put this proposal in context, in that remember that this was one part of Obama's giant stimulus, child of stimulus that he wanted to pass, a couple months ago here. That failed miserably in the Congress and by a bipartisan measure, I should mention. So what they've done is taken that big jobs bill, quote-unquote jobs bill, and broken it up into several different pieces of legislation, trying to pass them individually. And the goal here is not actually to do anything. The goal here is for Obama to make Republicans vote against these things time and time again so that he can run against Congress in the next election. He's made that quite clear. This is a political move, not a policy move. If you look at the merits of the bill itself, if you'd like to look at that, spending money wisely is not necessarily a job creation bill either. So spending money on roads or bridges and that stuff, sure, we'd all love to have new fancy great bridges, but whether or not that's the role of the federal government is one issue. The second issue is, frankly, we don't have the money. And until there is spending coming from somewhere else to fund these things, we need to start making hard decisions about where we're going to spend our money, not just every good idea that comes across our table say, oh, that looks great, and let's run up the credit card a bit more. And it's particularly interesting this week as we see Obama overseas lecturing with other world leaders regarding the debt crisis in Greece and stuff. Frankly, as Americans, I don't know where we have a leg to stand on right now when we're running trillions of dollars of debt every single year. Right,
we do need to get into the debt crisis in Greece. And Georgia, I know you wanted to respond, but maybe you can also talk about whether we ought to be really worried about what's happening in Greece.
Yes, we should be worried about what's happening in Greece. And the solution to our debt right now is to get the economy going. And what I find troublesome is that there seems to be a much greater emphasis on winning elections than trying to actually get the economy going. Infrastructure spending is the role of the government. A lot of these bridges, et cetera, are on national infrastructure, so that is the proper role of the federal government. Republicans voted for this earlier, but now that it has something to do with perhaps being seen as something that would help Obama's reelection, they're not voting on it. And Owen, you know as well as I do, it's not a matter of either or. It is both important for reelection and it is something that would create some jobs.
Oh, so Georgia, we're not headed the way of Greece with our debt?
Our economy is sufficiently stronger, bigger, has the capacity to bounce back, because when the economy bounces back, as Bill Clinton, the debt will go away. We need to make some hard choices. Owen and I agree on that. One of the hard choices is to bring revenue back into some kind of balance. There's not that much evidence out there that all of the market approaches that are being touted as the solution to bringing the market back actually work. In fact, if we recall, we had all of that when we got into this trouble under G.W. Bush. So, we really need to do something. I like to go back to the tax reform of 1986, where it was a true bipartisan effort, and they actually reformed the entire tax code. We have unfortunately become so polarized that we are not governing now. And if the world has worry about the United States, one of its primary worries is that Congress has become totally dysfunctional.
Let me, because we're running short on time, the Occupy movement in the news quite a bit this week for various reasons. The Occupy Oakland movement turned violent, and there was the burning of buildings and other things that occurred. The most of the Occupy Oakland folks are saying that was just some fringe group. It was not it was not representative of the movement. But Owen, your thoughts on what happened in Oakland this week?
You know, it's I think becoming typical of the Occupy movement, and that we're seeing them get more violent across the nation. We're seeing we saw the alleged rape, and I think it was Cincinnati Occupy movement, and we're seeing those things. What kind of boggles my mind about what happened in Oakland is that it makes no sense whatsoever. They're complaining about a lack of jobs. They're complaining about Wall Street and things like that, which I'm not really sure how much protesting in Oakland does to influence Washington or Wall Street or the conjunction thereof. But things like they shut down the port, where you've got, you know, hundreds of unionized longshoremen put out of work for the day, going to take no money home to their family that day because Occupy decided to shut down the port. So they're damaging their own community. The people who are working, the people who are generating income and putting into their community, they're damaging their own life and then complaining that it's bad. So it's very counterproductive, but I think that's a sign of the immaturity of the movement.
Mm-hmm. Georgia?
Protest takes many turns in order to get noticed and to get the point out there. I think Oakland, Cincinnati, Chicago are all an expression of frustration in the ways in which the system is out of whack. Whether they are a fringe group, which on the left could be the anarchists or the Trotskyites who do endorse violence, or provocateurs coming in to ruin the peaceful message of the movement. You know, the left always has this kind of trouble, just like the right has trouble with really fringe far-right types, and we see this. I do think that what they have succeeded in is bringing income equality, income inequality, and the loss of the middle class to the public agenda, much as the Tea Party brought other messages to the public agenda. I think it's healthy for the debate.
Let me really quickly here, as we are ending the program, Occupy Chicago protesters disrupted an event where Governor Walker was speaking the other day. He said, you know, my policies are working, and he wasn't too concerned about a recall effort, which will kick off in about a week or so. Georgia Durslotti, should he be concerned about that?
I think he is concerned about that, but the more he acts like he's not, the better positioned he is. So he's going to continue to act like he's not concerned.
And a ruling from the Attorney General that a recall effort ought to include the Lieutenant Governor if it includes the Governor, that they both need to be recalled. Georgia Durslotti?
Actually, it is an interesting point of law, so I'm glad he mentioned that he was going to hold it up for this right now so that they can organize for it.
And Owen, very briefly on those topics.
Well, people protesting Walker, I'm not sure why that's even news anymore.
Yeah, he's not concerned too much about this recall.
Right, and I, at this point, you know, I think realistically, he's concerned. Of course, he's working hard, and people around him are working hard to make sure he would succeed in such an effort. But from a public portrayal, of course, he's not going to come out there and say that he's worried.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank both of you very much for being with us. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Owen Robinson, columnist for the West Bend Daily News, and Georgia Durslotti, professor of political science at Beloit College. Time for the answer to our quiz question. Sarah, congratulations. She correctly answered that the massive burger that is being featured on the Man vs. Food Nation program is called the Gravedigger. It is named after former Packer defensive lineman Gilbert Brown, number 93. So it's 93 ounces. The Gravedigger Burger. Thanks very much to Rob Ferret, Bill Martins, and Amanda Magnus for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
old Calio, we are bound to go.
Pirates, adventure, storms at sea, and romance. It's the music of Milwaukee's Bounding Main. I'm Stephanie Alkins, and this a cappella singing group will be live on Simply Folk this week. Tune in for traditional maritime music at 5 this Sunday, right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Your bars, heave her away, rocker, oh,
roll. WPR.org is a great place to listen to WPR's radio programs, and it's also the place to listen again, because many of our WPR programs are archived, so you can hear them whenever you want. Visit WPR.org to learn more.